Your Steve Jones Show podcast will start shortly. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Brewers Outlet, your beverage supermarket on Reagan Street in Sunbury. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Happy Friday, everybody. Great to have you with us on News Radio 1070 WKOK. High school football tonight, Shikellamy and Holy Redeemer. That will be in Berwick at 7 tonight. Airtime with Kevin and the Chief will be at 6:30. Looking forward to that very much. Selins Grove tonight will be on Eagle 107, Lewisburg on 100.9 The Valley. So some big games coming up around the area tonight, and we'll have you completely covered. Don't forget Sean Carey will also have game night coming up as well. Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drink, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day in the pickle bar. Led by the barrels and the dills. By the way, Buhner loves the garlic. Indeed, second to none. All at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. And we're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. You want to deal with the best? You deal with them. Best product, best sales staff, best service department. That is Sunbury Motors. All right. Last night, Patriots. Tom Brady did not play well last night at all. They outlasted the Giants 35-14. That was a 21-14 game early in the fourth quarter, and the Patriots finally won it 35-14. In fact, the first Patriots touchdown was a block punt. Actually went off Nate Stupar's helmet, and they scored on that. I mean, that's how it played. Brady did not play well last night. The Astros won last night. Gerrit Cole dominant through eight innings. Former State College Spike Tyler Glasnow, who was in the draft class with Gerrit Cole. Cole did not come to State College, but Glasnow did. He took the loss last night. He said, look, I was tipping my pitches. So here's the setup. Cardinals and Nationals and the Yankees and the Astros. Yankees and Astros, by the way, get underway tomorrow night at 7:30. Also a big weekend of college football, not just Penn State, Iowa, which you'll hear on News Radio 1070 WKOK starting at 6 tomorrow. But also you've got some other big games. Bucknell, by the way, playing at Colgate on Eagle 107 tomorrow with Doug and Kevin. Also, Notre Dame, USC, Oklahoma, Texas, LSU hosting Florida, and Alabama, Texas A&M, Florida State, Clemson. Big games coming up tomorrow. Coming up, we'll hear from James Franklin from his press conference on Tuesday. Great to have you with us. Brought to you by Brewers Outlet on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. We're in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. James Franklin's press conference, second half of it from Tuesday. The first voice you'll hear will be that of Strategic Communications Director Chris Peterson.
Mike Gross, Lancaster Newspapers.
Good afternoon, James.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, with Iowa and Coach Ferentz, said at the beginning, it's the same thing year after year after year. How do you think he's been able to sustain it for as long as he has? We don't see, for whatever it's worth, we don't see top 10 recruiting classes at Iowa. We don't see what people think of as fancy X and O stuff. But what do you see there that it has allowed him to be so consistent for so long?
I think they are a program and a team that has an identity and have built towards that identity and recruited towards that identity and schemed towards that identity for a long time. That starts with the head coach. That starts with the hiring and the ability to keep assistants for long periods of time. And I think what they've done a really good job is not allowing, maybe what is the hot fad or the sexy current fad to impact them. You know, they're going to do it the way they do it. You know, I look at Wisconsin very similar in that light as well, and Iowa in that light. You know, so when you're able to keep, a head coach there as long as they've, kept him there, and they have an identity, and the identity fits the university, the identity fits the community, and they get that. They know who they are, and every day they're building towards that. And when you have that, you got a chance to have sustained success. And I think that may sound easier to sit up here and say it than it is to actually go out and do it. Cause you look all over the country. People are having a hard time replicating that. I also think, that it appears to me that it's appreciated there. The level of consistency that they have, is appreciated there. So I think it's really kind of a combination of all of it.
Donnie Collins, Grand Times Tribune.
Hey, James, how are you doing?
Good, Donnie. How are you?
Doing well. I want to ask you about something you mentioned earlier with Shaka when he was a 195-pounder in high school and you wanted him at outside linebacker. How important was playing defensive end to him then, and what made you guys think he could become the player there that he has?
Well, it wasn't really a big part of it early on. I remember we offered him and literally he jumped up and did a cartwheel in the hallway. During I think it was late in the process during the contact period. Mark Schmidt, his high school defensive coordinator, was the head coach at my high school for a number of years. I've known him for a long time. He used to coach at Lock Haven. He's a good football guy. He knows football. Kind of all of that. He's just really good high school program, won state championship, had a bunch of opportunities, had a bunch of offers. We knew we wanted him in our program. We weren't really sure what he was going to be. We were projecting him as an outside linebacker, although he played defensive end. Again, just like I talked about, Iowa's program, I think Shaka knew his identity and, embraced it and pushed back on us and said, this is what I want to do. We felt strongly about him that we wanted him in the program and were comfortable with giving him that opportunity at defensive end. Although he's undersized, he is really strong. He understands how to use leverage and his intelligence, like I said before, is kind of off the chart. So, I think with Shaka, he knows who he is. He knows the type of players that he is. He knows his strengths. He knows his weaknesses, and he plays a style of game that allows him to be successful. So, we're very, very pleased with him.
Corey Geiger, Altoona Mirror.
Hi, James.
Hey, Corey.
James, you may have answered some of this or Mike's question on Iowa, but I wanted to ask you about playing there specifically. Why are they so tough there? Anything you can pinpoint, the pink locker room, the atmosphere, the fans being right on top of the stadium, why are they so difficult to play there?
Yeah, I think, obviously when you're able to have a home field advantage, you're tough to play at home. And, there's a number of programs in the country that are like that. We have, obviously, a distinct home field advantage. There's some programs that have it, and there's others that don't. It's a combination of, the place will be sold out. It'll be loud. They are right on top of you the way the stadium's built. It's not one of them old school stadiums that used to have a track around it. They're right on top of you. I think the fact that they don't have pro sports teams there, they're the only show. They're the show. And they get great support from the state. They get great support from the community. It's a place that not only with Coach Ferentz, but even before him, they've had consistency. you know, it's one of those places. So, you know, I think for all the things that we just talked about is why they have a home field advantage. It's loud. It's hostile. You know, they're on top of you. They feed off of their crowd. We hope to prepare our guys in a way that we can feed off of the energy in the stadium. You know, this is why you come to Penn State, to play in games like this in these types of environments.
Open up to questions here in the room. Raise your hand. We'll get a mic to you.
Hey, James, how are you today?
Good. Hey, Mark.
You have four safeties who seem to be playing at a pretty high level. What does that do for your defense in terms of the flexibility and how you're able to use them, especially when you could bring guys like Brisker and Sutherland off the bench?
Yeah, I think rotating those guys helps obviously keep them fresh. It also helps us in our nickel and dime package. We've got a lot of guys that we believe in. We also have a number of guys with different skill sets and different body types that we can take advantage of those things as well. But I think whenever you have depth and talent and trust, you know, trust in your players and the players trust in the coaches, then it allows you to do some pretty cool things based on matchups and personnel. It also helps us on special teams a great deal too. So, you know, we think it's a really good group. Coach Banks has done a great job of developing those guys. He's a great resource for Coach Pry as our co-defensive coordinator guy that, you know, has been a defensive coordinator, I think, for 15 years before coming to Penn State. So I think that's really valuable because they're not only being coached by, you know, one of the better, if not the best, you know, safety coaches in the country, but also a guy that thinks big picture and understands, you know, how all the parts fit together. His coordinating experience, I think, helps from that standpoint, too.
Hey, James, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
Good. You had a little bit of this experience before the Maryland game in terms of a night game that allowed you to do some extra recruiting stuff. But what does it mean to go to the Midwest, maybe get some extra time Friday on the road with it being a night game? And just how beneficial is that to get your guys out there, maybe send it to a night game and not a noon start or something that's a little bit later in the day?
Yeah, I don't think we're doing anything. Yeah, I think you know, obviously, you know, depending on where you're at, and how many guys you're actively recruiting in those areas, then it makes sense. I think this one, we'll probably spend some time in the hotel watching film and grading tape and having some discussions and extra meetings getting ready for the guys. And then the other thing, to be honest with you, it's allowing the coaches and staff to sleep in a little bit. You know, we grind at it pretty good. And when you don't even have that Saturday morning, that's where the 12 o'clock games, you know, going out, you know, I went out Friday night and then up early Saturday morning. That Saturday morning, even if it's just an extra hour, is helpful. So, you know, from what I understand, our plan, we're not going out on Friday. We'll sleep in and get ready for the game and go from there.
James, you mentioned Iowa's kind of their identity, their offense, and how that's really who they are, kind of what that university is. Do you feel like you guys have that at this point in the season for your offense, that identity, and do you kind of know what it is, or is it still evolving?
Yes. Yeah, I think again, you don't get to the point where you're number five in the country in scoring defense and scoring offense without an identity. I think the numbers, you know, back that up clearly.
That with the chunk plays, I know Sean said that he wants to be a little more accurate on those deep throws. Is there anything that you've noticed with those plays in him? Anything you think maybe he needs to fix or clean up? Anything that's
standing out? I think like always with the quarterback, it's footwork. You know, it's funny in the recruiting process, everybody wants to focus on the quarterback's release, or you hear about guys in college or the NFL that they're going to go to this quarterback guru and fix their release, and that kid's been thrown in the backyard with his dad since he's 3 years old, and they're going to change his release in 6 months. I've always been a believer, you know, obviously you want the release to be as clean as possible, but, you know, you watch, there's been a lot of guys to be successful, you know, in the NFL. We played against Phillip Rivers at NC State, 4 years in a row. And then I've watched him now. I think he's in year 15 in the NFL and has had an unbelievable NFL career. And you look at him coming out of high school and college, he did not have a traditional release. You know, we're big believers that the game of football is played from the ground up at every single position. And if you start with a really good stance and start and you got clean footwork to allow the quarterback to be in rhythm,
So he's on time with his throws, and he got a chance to be successful. And you know, the old days of the three-step drop, the three hit and throw, the three and a hitch, the five hit and throw, the five and a hitch, and then, you know, the seven-step drop as well, you know, that was, you know, pretty distinct, pretty clear. Where now, with all the different things that you're doing in RPO offense, you know, with the ride and decide and things like that, it actually makes the footwork even more challenging. There's just been some times where we haven't been as clean with our footwork, and it is hard to be consistently accurate if your feet aren't where you need them to be, where you want them to be. So there's some things that I know he's working on and Ricky's working on trying to refine. Overall, been pretty good. You look at our completion percentage and things like that, you know, we've done a pretty good job. But, you know, this week and as the weekend, as the year progresses, you know, our margin of error is small, and we got to make sure that we're putting Sean and the offense and the defense and the special teams in the best chance to be successful, putting our players in the best chance to be successful. And that's always going to come back to fundamentals. You know, I think that's one of the things I think you have to be careful of is, you know, at the end of the day, the most consistent programs, you know, people get way too caught up in the schemes, and schemes matter, don't get me wrong, but typically the most successful, the most consistent programs are going to be the most fundamentally sound week in and week out. Who blocks the best, who tackles the best, who protects the football, you know, those types of things. So you know, at a certain point you have to be really good in every area, but you know, we're always going to be a fundamentalist program.
Hey, James.
Hey, Bob.
You've often talked about identifying potential game wreckers on the other team, having a plan for them because they can change the game. Would you view Epinesa in that light? And can you speak to maybe the challenge that Rashid Walker might have? Because he lines up on the right side a little bit, and, yep, and Rashid's got five starts.
Yep. Yeah, I think that's more than fair. Yeah, I would say both defensive ends. You know, we've been really impressed with, you know, both defensive ends. Obviously, Epinesa is the guy that got all the headlines coming into the season, but we've been really impressed with both of those guys, and Geno Stone. Those three guys on defense, and I'm not slighting any of them. They got a bunch of really good players, but those three guys consistently jump off at us. And then on offense, it's obviously the two offensive tackles, you know, the quarterback and the wide receiver group, especially with the Smith-Marset, you know, young man. So they're the guys that you go into it saying we better have an awareness of where they are on every single play and down, and we better have a plan from a schematic standpoint that accounts for them too.
Head football coach James Franklin at his press conference on Tuesday. Tomorrow, the Nittany Lions will take on Iowa. That will be at Kinnick Stadium. We're on beginning at 6 o'clock. And the kickoff will be 7:44 tomorrow evening at Kinnick Stadium in Iowa City. James Franklin went through an entire video presentation with his team, showing them the stripe out in Kinnick Stadium, showing them the pink locker room, showing them the color rush uniforms they're going to wear. So you went through a whole video presentation for all the players that have never been there before. All right, that's the lineup there. Yesterday, Gabe Kapler was fired as the manager of the Philadelphia Phillies. Right now, Pennsylvania has two major league teams, neither as a manager. We'll talk with Joe Giulio next half hour as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Are you terrified by your old ride? Don't fear. If you want to have a fun day, you have to buy a Hyundai at Sunbury Motors Hyundai. Treat yourself to a nicer, newer ride from SFC. Choose from 12 2019 Hyundai Tucson's with $4,000 off, starting at $22,369. There's 17 Hyundai Konas in stock, starting at only $20,352. Sunbury Motors Hyundai has brand new Sonatas starting under $19,000. Plus, hurry in. There's four Hyundai Palisades in stock. And every new Hyundai comes with America's best warranty.
10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain limited warranty.
And Hyundai Assurance. Don't be terrified by your old ride. If you want to have a fun day, you have to buy a Hyundai from Sunbury Motors Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury.
Driving you over 100 years, Sunbury Motors.
Party time, game time, or just fun time. Doesn't matter what time it is, because it's Brewer's Outlet time. The Beverage Supermarket has the area's largest beer selection, imports, microbrews, ciders, and domestics. Pick from over 100 ice-cold 12-packs and dozens of 24-ounce singles. Soda, snacks, hot sauces, fresh roasted peanuts. Make it one-stop party shopping, and don't forget the pickle bar. So whatever you're celebrating or just doing it up, Brewer's Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, wants to see you. And thank you for your years of patronage.
Sports Talk, where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great Friday to you, and you know what Friday means. Friday means it is time to stock up on the beverages and the snacks. We have a football feast for you this weekend. Of course, high school football's tonight, including Holy Redeemer and Shikellamy playing in Berwick tonight. That's at 7. Kevin and the Chief with their great broadcast coming up at 6:30 this evening here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Sealands Grove will be on Eagle 107 tonight. Lewisburg on 100.9 The Valley. And the high school football weekend gets us rolling. Then tomorrow it's a big day of college football. Texas, Oklahoma, in the Cotton Bowl, the Red River Rivalry, Notre Dame, USC, LSU hosting Florida, Alabama, Texas A&M, Clemson, Florida State. Actually, some pretty intriguing games. And, of course, Penn State and Iowa tomorrow night. You want to make sure you're fully stocked. Right? We're not going to call it the man cave. Let's call it the family cave. Because guess what? Guys like to watch college football. Women like to watch college football. Kids like to watch college football. So Brewer's Outlet can take care of all needs. All right? You love beer? Imports, domestics, microbrews. Best selection of beer anywhere. Maybe you love wine coolers. Great. Hey, I mentioned the kids are going to watch the game. So if the kids are going to watch the game, you want to have plenty of soda. Kids are going to watch the game, you want to have plenty of water. Plenty of snacks. They also love fresh, hot roasted peanuts. Bags are right there at the register. And the pickle bar, led by the barrels and the dills. Buna are big on garlic, by the way. Indeed, second to none. All at Brewer's Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. And I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio. And you only deal with the best. Sunbury Motors. The product line, awesome. Sales, by the way, incredible. And the sales staff is terrific. And the service department, second to none. It is all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Here in Pennsylvania, we have two Major League Baseball teams. As of this hour, neither of them has a manager. Clint Hurdle was fired right at the end of the season by the Pirates after his 9 years there and three playoff appearances. Gabe Kapler twisted in the wind for 2 weeks and then was informed yesterday that it was time to go someplace else. So we had an opportunity yesterday to catch up with Joe Giglio from 94WIP in Philadelphia and from NJ.com. Joe, welcome. It's great to have you with us.
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Hey, thanks for being with us. Let's start with this, Joey. He obviously twisted in the wind for a period of time. Many thought that the longer it went, the more many might stay. So how did you view today's action?
So I wasn't surprised. I was part of that viewpoint. When the season ended, it felt like just the way it was being reported on, the way it was being talked about, and kind of the way the tone of Gabe Kapler's last press conference, the final day of the season, it felt like 99-1 that he was gone. And then as the days have gone on here, and it took so long, and the Phillies kept some of his coaches and other teams fired all their managers, I moved to more 60-40, 55-45. But I felt, if I were to wager on it, I would have thought since the season ended that he would not be their manager moving forward. It's just kind of a weird roundabout way the Phillies made their decision here.
All right, so Joe, here's the next part. This is very simplistic, but on opening day 2018, when he took Aaron Nola out after, 60-something pitches, 68 pitches, I felt like that before he got to the seventh inning of his managerial tenure with Philadelphia, he lost the fan base. I know that's simplistic, but is there some reality to that?
There's complete reality. I was doing our final out, our post-game show here on WIP after that game. I mean, I was the first person on after Gabe Kapler's first game as manager, and yes, I agree with you. He never won over this fan base, and this is a very Philadelphia thing. Let's just be honest. You know, the fans here, and it's a good thing. I mean, I'm part of it. I'm a fan here. We have a lot of say, and we have a lot of kind of our influence the owners and teams listen to because they want the teams to reflect the city. And Gabe Kapler, I think through no fault of his own, I think he was Gabe Kapler throughout. He was the guy they hired, the guy that they interviewed and gave him the job. He was true to himself. He was true to the way he wanted to manage. And just to kind of juxtaposition, and I find it almost poetic in the irony that the last managerial move of his that was debated hotly here, and it was in a lot of the stories today that were kind of the obituary on his tenure, end of the season, they're about a week and a half to go. The Phillies are, I mean, they need to win 9 out of the last 10 or whatever it was to have a chance. It was over anyway, but they lost the game in Atlanta. They were trying to sweep them. It was a Thursday afternoon, and Gabe Kapler not only allowed Aaron Nola to stay in the game through the 6th, 7th inning, but with first base open, he allowed him to pitch to Freddie Freeman instead of intentionally walking him. So I think it's almost poetic that his tenure started with not trusting Nola against Freddie Freeman, and it ended with he trusted Nola against Freddie Freeman. Neither worked. That was kind of the story for Gabe Kapler here in Philadelphia.
Did he have the support in the clubhouse?
I think he did. Now, I don't know what was said behind closed doors, and I don't know what some of these players, the stars, said to owner John Middleton, because that was, I guess, part of this whole process was gauging the players. Outwardly, they seemed to like playing for him. That part of that may have been that he let it be a very player-friendly clubhouse. I don't think he had many rules. I don't think he was a disciplinarian. So did they love him? I don't know. Did they like him? I think they did. And outside of maybe one or two players over the last 2 years, I can't remember anyone speaking anything but highly of him. So if I had to say, I would say, yeah, they liked Gabe Kapler.
You and I both know that when moves are made, 80% of the time, to be fair, they go the opposite of what they had. So let's take the Yankees are a good example. Joe Girardi was not the biggest guy in analytics. Aaron Boone convinced them he was. So they made the move with him. They have a disciplinarian. You go with somebody who's looser. You have somebody who's looser, you go with a disciplinarian. So what's your thought process now on what the Phillies might do? Do they steer maybe in a different direction instead of heavy, heavy analytics, or do they stick with it?
So I think this is the most fascinating part, and I agree with you. This is the way it typically goes. And let's just use the Yankee example, because I think that's a fun and kind of juxtaposition to what's going on here in Philadelphia. So, yes, that Girardi was kind of he pushed back a little bit. He wasn't totally on board with some of the things that the front office wanted to do. And they went and got a guy that fit the front office. And I think that is the issue the Phillies are now going to have. They kept Matt Klentak. They kept the general manager. And I think in today's baseball, the GM and the manager have to be on the same page. There has to be a symbiotic relationship. Klentak and Kapler were. Now, they didn't get results, and that's why this is not going to work. But if they go the other way, now the disciplinary part, maybe they can find that, and that could be the opposite of Kapler. But really, if they go the other way in terms of the way he wants to manage a game and throughout a game, it's not going to jive with what Klentak wants. So if they do this, you're going to have a GM and a manager who are not on the same page, and ultimately, I don't think that is the best for any team.
Okay, so let's throw out an experienced name that wouldn't be quite the same as Gabe Kapler. You hear the rumblings that Buck Showalter could be considered. Would that be realistic?
I think it is. If I had to wager, I think it's the most realistic. Well, mostly because I think Joe Girardi probably has other offers. Joe Maddon probably has the Angels' offer. So I think Buck Showalter makes a lot of sense. And it might be the best of all the worlds when you try to check all the boxes. More of a disciplinarian, more experience, and he has worked in Baltimore with basically everyone in this Phillies front office. So maybe it's not as seamless as it was with Klentak Kapler, but at least there's a working relationship there with the front office currently in Philadelphia, Andy McPhail, Matt Klentak, Ned Rice. They basically hired Buck Showalter down in Baltimore. So there's something there that feels like if they're going for the most seamless transition, that one I think makes the most sense.
All right. Any other names that come to your mind that you would say that would make sense for this organization? Who else would fall into that category, Joe?
So I think a name to watch is because he has connections to Andy McPhail, who was the team president, is the team president here, was in Baltimore, was also in Chicago in the early 2000s. That'd be Dusty Baker. Now, Dusty Baker, been out for a couple years, always seemed to be the manager that could win, but not win the big one, and he'd be a departure from the way the Phillies have tried to manage in-game. But I think that name is one to watch. And frankly, I don't think they'll go with another first-time manager because that's they want to win right now. I don't know if they want to go through the growing pains again like with Gabe. But if they did, Raul Ibanez, ex-Philly, and he's been working in front offices, and the Yankees were interested in him a couple years ago. He, at that time, said it wasn't for him, and he just retired. I think he wanted to be with his family. If Raul Ibanez is interested, I could see the Phillies at least giving him an interview. So I put his name in the mix, Dusty Baker, Buck Showalter, and probably Maddon and Girardi is kind of the pipe dream type of hopefuls if they could get an interview with those guys.
How interested have you been in what seems to be a recent trend of some teams hiring guys that don't have managerial experience? Aaron Boone didn't have any. Now, he also writes out a lineup card that is Aaron Judge, Giancarlo Stanton, and Gary Sanchez. And not all the time, obviously, but most of the time. How interested are you in the fact that that's been some of the trend in Major League Baseball?
Well, I think it speaks to the lessening of the power of the manager. I mean, the other thing about it is if you go look at some of these guys that you're describing, their salaries compared to the Mike Socias, the Joe Maddons, it's peanuts. Yeah. Gabe Kapler is making less than $1 million a year. I think it tells you the power of the manager now compared to back in the day, and it's why the manager is really an extension of the front office. It's a front office person wearing a uniform, and I think all these teams are trying to find that perfect balance where they think like a GM. They think big picture, long term. They think about win probability, but they used to play the game so they can relate to the player. So I was on board with the Gabe Kapler hire from the start because I think that's the future. It's just about finding the right person, right message, and getting everyone to buy in. But I think we're going to get more of these kind of hires to move forward.
Who made up the lineup every day, Gabe, or did he have help making it up?
So, I mean, Matt Klentak has been steadfast in saying that everything that happens in the game, before the game, decisions on playing time, it's all Gabe. But then Gabe also says that they speak every day and they go over stuff every day. So I'm sure Gabe had final say, but I don't think it was I think Matt Klentak had a lot of say on the big picture and how they were going to use these players.
Phillies made a lot of moves during the last offseason. And between you and me, Joe, there are very few of those moves I even remotely disagree with. But it also tells me they had much further to go than people realize. That's just my opinion. You may have a different opinion being much closer to it. But what do they need to do in this offseason to attempt to close a gap on a team in Atlanta that appears to really be flourishing despite what happened yesterday?
Yeah, you have Atlanta, and then Washington Nationals are not going to go anywhere. I mean, Steven Strasburg could opt out, and that cuts off some of their star power, but they're in the NLCS. Juan Soto is 20 years old. Now, they might lose Rendon. That will hurt, but they have a lot there. So, you have two teams in this division that are quite talented. Here's the way I look at it. If they really, truly want to compete next year with those teams, they need to revamp the starting rotation in a significant way, and that probably means spending a lot of money. It probably means getting creative with a trade and hoping the pitcher they bring in hits here and maybe he's better here than wherever he was before and you kind of steal somebody. So that's the first thing. But to go to your point on last year and now we realize they still have so much further to go, I think the biggest mistake they've made, and part of it is happenstance and circumstance, and you strike when the iron's hot, especially when it comes to signing a guy like Bryce Harper. But I think when you look at their 40-man roster compared to everybody else, not just their five or six best players, but their 40-man, they just don't have the organizational depth. They don't have the prospects. They don't have young guys coming through that can contribute. I think the Phillies' rebuild was a year or two away from being good enough to go all in. They decided to go all in last offseason. They gave us the picture of, we're ready. But then as the year went on and you watch the guys that were playing and filling in, you're like, well, then they weren't ready. It just was obvious.
From the fans' point of view, how tough a season was it? Because it didn't even seem like the fans were enjoying the wins.
They weren't, and I wasn't. I mean, it was the strangest season in that They had one seven-game losing streak in June. That was their worst week of the season. They bounced back from that, and they played basically 500 after that. They never won more than four in a row. It was very tough to have strong emotions one way or the other. They never, outside of the one bad week, were so bad, you're like, fire everyone, season's over. They were never good enough, though, that anyone truly started to latch on and believe. It was like every 2 days your emotions fluctuated from, yeah, they're not good enough to, maybe, and they know the wild card race is there for them. They were truly, in every way, and I think the numbers back it up, the way the season went, they were a 500 baseball team, which I think sometimes those teams in any sport are the most difficult to just kind of have a discussion about, because if you're bad, you're like, well, blow the whole thing up. If you're great, you're thinking big picture World Series, and if you're 500, well, you're 500.
And the bottom line is, if you're 500, you feel like, okay, we're this close to just, boom, taking off, and you never do. And that's where the frustration comes in.
Yes, and it happened time and again. And I think the other frustrating part was the Phillies had a lot of moments where they played really well against the best teams in baseball, and they had a lot of moments,
yeah,
like basically their season series against the Marlins, where they played bad against the worst teams. They had a stretch in August where they, I think it was a three-game series here in Philadelphia and then two up in Boston at Fenway Park. And, you know, those series were separated by another series in between, but they swept them. They beat the Cubs three in a row. They went to Fenway, beat the defending champion Red Sox, both games in Fenway. And in between, I think they lost a series at home. It might have been to the Padres or the White Sox. And it was like, what are they doing? Like, why? And it was just, it was a frustrating team.
One final point. I always feel like one of the determining factors in an offseason is what a team does with its bullpen, because you and I both know that essentially you're trying to catch lightning in a bottle with two or three guys. Can they have a career year for us? I mean, that's all these champions that you look at them one after another caught lightning in a bottle with one or two guys in the bullpen who had the season of all seasons, and then after that they disappear into oblivion. How difficult is that for any organization to try and scout this thing out and roll the dice to get a couple of guys like that?
Very difficult, and I think the Phillies entered the year thinking they had that kind of bullpen. They were bullish on their bullpen to start the season. Yeah. They had a million injuries, basically wiped the whole thing out. But here's where I'll go back to organizational depth and a good farm system. Think of people like the Yankees. Yes, you know, look, they will buy relievers. They will have an Aroldis Chapman that makes a lot of money. But most of their good relievers, Chad Green, Dylan Betances, who was hurt most this year, became one of those last decade or so. Those are failed starters, talented arms they had in their organization. They realize at some point, yeah, they're not very good starters. They put them in the bullpen, and they dominate. The Phillies can't even fill a rotation, let alone take extra starting pitchers and put them in the bullpen and try to see if their stuff plays up. So that's where you get lucky. That's where you find a reliever you didn't know you had. And unfortunately for the Phillies, they've been trying to still squeeze those guys into the rotation in what the reality is they're probably best suited to hopefully become what we're talking about.
Over the last 10 years, you're talking about Andrew Miller. First-round pick by the Tigers.
Yep.
Ended up being a dynamic relief guy. So.
Yeah, and look, for the Phillies right now, Nick Pivetta. I mean, if we're looking at one guy, that maybe that is where he could become, like what he could become, because we've seen it time and again. He's a failed starter. They love his stuff, And I think if he's ever going to figure it out in Major League Baseball, it might be exactly what we're kind of surmising here.
Joe, thanks so much. Appreciate you coming on with us on such short notice, and the insight was great.
Anytime, guys. Appreciate it.
Joe Giglio, WIP Philadelphia, and also NJ.com. Of course, we are your home for the Philadelphia Phillies all year round. Looking forward to carrying another great Philly season. We'll find out which way they go. Again, the early indicators, and it doesn't mean it's going to be the final word, but Buck Showalter could be deeply involved in this job. We'll see. A veteran, professional hand at it. Maybe that's what the Phillies need, but they also have to make some other moves in the offseason too. Temple and Memphis should be a heck of a football game. I know Rodgers going down to see that game at Lincoln Financial Field. That actually is going to be a really good game. Memphis is ranked 23rd in the country. They're a really good football team. Let's give Temple credit. Temple has played very well at times this year. You know what I like? I like their defense. I like that they hit you in the mouth. And I like the quarterback very much at Temple. That should be a good game. It's another one that's on the slate coming up this weekend. Look, it's mid-October. Leaves are turning. Little crispness in the air. Be a little bit tonight as well when you go out to your high school football game. And remember, the Holy Redeemer Shikellamy game that you'll hear on News Radio 1070 WKOK is in Berwick tonight. And then Shikellamy, of course, will take on Holy Redeemer, as I mentioned. Lewisburg will be on 100.9 in the Valley, and Sealands Grove and Eagle 107. Bucknell is at Colgate tomorrow, and that's on Eagle 107 as well. Bucknell looking to break through under Dave Cicchini. All right, next half hour, Mark Morehouse from the Gazette in Iowa City. Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury on News Radio 1070 WKOK.